This is what we do in our room at night with the lights off, making those wet, slappy noises. This is Poor Mojo's news show for Friday, March 16th, 2007, a daily roundup of things that seemed important. Writing about a BBC report on childhood obesity, Poor Mojo's Newswire editor Fritz said, "So, a series of serious, peer-reviewed government-financed studies in the UK have shown that how much a child runs around, either in sport or on their own, has no relationship to their body mass index or the measure of how fat they are. Here, in University of Michigan, researchers have found a strong relationship between a child's BMI and how early puberty occurs. But what are we to do?" Fritz goes on to say that government both finds it easy to take the food industry's money, not to look into what makes our kids fat, and also easy to take the money from the sports industry to promote activities that won't keep our kids from getting fat. Fritz also commented on the New York Times article about how the United States needs to replace 4 billion incandescent light bulbs with fluorescent alternatives to save electricity. He writes, "It's an effort to cut national energy consumption, I kid you not, by a maximum of about 3%. If we turned off every incandescent bulb in the country and simply went without that extra light, we'd only cut energy consumption by 9%. It's ultimately a depressing article. But 4 billion light sockets? There's a very big, generation-defining joke in there somewhere. How many, screw in the light bulb, kind of people, Polish people, alternative ethnic or social groups. The material is here, people. Send your entries for the How Many Blanks Does It Take to Change 4 Billion Incandescent Light Bulbs Joke Writing Contest to Alan, that's A-L-A-N, at poormojo.org. What more could the Recording Industry Association of America do to make people hate mainstream recording artists and record companies? Let's see. Have they sued single mothers for thousands of dollars for their 12-year-old's mistakes? Check. Have they sued the estates of dead people? Check. Have they forced college kids to drop out of school to pay the judgments against them? Check. And now they've gone ahead and sued a stroke victim who can't move half his body and who lives on a disability check and who wasn't living in the state where the alleged file sharing took place, according to Boing Boing. And now, according to Consumerist, they've gone ahead and increased the fees they charge National Public Radio 20-fold. When NPR spends tons of time and effort promoting new artists to its audience. So what could the RIAA do next to prove themselves worthy of our love? Douse an orphanage in kerosene and light it after nailing the doors shut? Rape kittens on live TV? Seriously, guys, you are wretched assholes. This is Poor Mojo's news show. Sure, I, Lewis Scooter Libby, convicted liar, is a bad guy, but he's a sad little henchman standing in the shadows of true criminals, like former Assistant Secretary of Defense Douglas Feith. Antiwar.com has an excellent recap of Feith's awfulness, focusing on his personal authoring of the orders to disband the entire Iraqi army and destroy the civilian government infrastructure. From the article, "I was a student in Germany after the Second World War. Even after ousting all the Nazis, America did not dismiss every school teacher and village administrator, but that's what the U.S. government did in Iraq. Was Feith trying to provoke a Shiite-Sunni civil war? What other disasters did Feith have a hand in? Feith's actions are comprehensible if one connects them to his loyalties to the ultra-right-wing Israeli Likud Party. Polls in Israel show that most Israelis want to trade the West Bank for peace. A recent Gallup poll shows that most Jewish Americans have strongly opposed the Iraq War, despite the Israel lobby's enthusiasm for it. Feith was not merely sympathetic to Israeli concerns, he acted on behalf of an extreme faction of the Israeli government. This all demands an investigation with congressional subpoena power." From day one of the occupation of Iraq, actually from 1991 and the first Iraq War, critics have said the whole point of the exercise was stealing Iraq's oil. And the mainstream political establishment and media said those critics were tinfoil hat-wearing nutcases. Well, ever heard of production sharing agreements? Antonia Juhasz breaks it down for you in her New York Times article, "Whose Oil Is It Anyway?", which we found via the Randy Rhodes Show. There's a bill which has been approved by the Iraqi cabinet and which now goes to the country's parliament that hands control of Iraq's oil over to four oil companies for 30 years. From the article, until about 35 years ago, the world's oil was largely in the hands of seven corporations based in the United States and Europe. Those seven have since merged into four: ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, and BP. Ever since they lost their exclusive control of the oil to the governments, the companies have been trying to get it back. The Iraq hydrocarbon law would take the majority of Iraq's oil out of the exclusive hands of the Iraqi government and open it to international oil companies for a generation or more. And here's what I've got to say about it. If the Iraqi parliament is forced to make this bill law and hand control of Iraq's oil over to four private corporations while its country is occupied by foreign forces, then you really will have, as an American, waged a war of choice on a sovereign nation to steal its treasure. Can we now stop all the pretense about spreading democracy to the Arab world? And what kind of place is Iraq today? It's a place where rape is apparently used as a weapon of war, not much surprising about that. But ever heard of a rape victim being arrested for talking about being raped? The Times of London story says that Sabreen Janabi shocked Iraq last month when she appeared on Al Jazeera television and accused three policemen of detaining her and then raping her in their garrison. Janabi has been arrested herself by Iraq's government for inciting violence. She's blamed for a wave of sectarian killings in the wake of her announcement. Shia officials have accused her of being a proxy for Sunni militants who want to sabotage a security plan for Baghdad, while Sunni politicians have pointed to her story as proof of the sectarian nature of Shia Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's government. This is Poor Mojo's News Show, a member of the Progressive Podcast Network. There are many excellent progressive podcasts out there for you to download and listen to at progressivepodcastnetwork.org. Did Wizard Magazine engage in insider trading? You decide after hearing this from the Bent Corner blog. Newsarama's Vanita Rogers talks with comic book retailers about Captain America number 25. It's an interesting read, especially when the topic turns to how Wizard Universe, which is owned by the same company as Wizard Magazine, sold hundreds of issues of Captain America 25 on eBay on Wednesday at prices from $10 to $50 an issue. It's as though Wizard Universe had some kind of inside information from Marvel Comics that Captain America 25 would include the death of Captain America. That's something no other comic retailer was privy to, that Captain America was going to be killed. Did anyone at Wizard Magazine, with information concerning what was going to happen in Captain America 25, advise their counterparts at Wizard Universe to stock up on copies so they could quickly post them on eBay? It sure seems like it. It also seems highly unethical. Do all stores charge the same amount for generic drugs? Hell no, according to the Freakonomics blog. Their investigator began snooping around and found that two chains, Costco and Sam's Club, sold generics at prices far, far below the other chains. Prices for 90 Prozac tablets ranged from $12 at Costco to $117 at Walgreens. So, shop around, ask questions. Sacred Public Radio bore Garrison Keillor must have a blood clot in his brain that has damaged his ability to hide his small-minded homophobia. That's the only explanation for this drivel from an article in Salon via Feministing.
The country's come to accept stereotypical gay men, sardonic fellows with fussy hair who live in overdecorated apartments with a striped sofa and a small weird dog and who worship campy performers and go in for flamboyance now and then themselves. If they want to be accepted as couples and daddies, however, the flamboyance may have to be brought under control. Parents are supposed to stand back and not wear chartreuse pants and black polka dot shirts. That's for the kids. It's their show.
Oh, thank you, Garrison Keillor, for making it acceptable to fucking hate Garrison Keillor. Now take that hackneyed, precious, droning, self-important radio abortion and shove it sideways up your gray, wrinkled ass. Maybe we'll be able to listen to NPR stations on Saturday evening again. Dan Savage of the Savage Love column points out that Keillor is a serial adulterer who left his wife for his lover, then left his lover for his second wife, then left her for his Danish language teacher, and now says that his eyes are opened every day to the wonder of parenting in what must be his 60s, his newest baby girl with his third wife, which I'm certain makes his children from his failed marriages feel like shit. Garrison, shut the fuck up. Our theme song is an untitled piece from the disc Himno Nacional by The Figures, available at fingerprint-records.com. Find us online at pormojo.org and follow the link to the newswire. On behalf of Longo, Brett, Jim, Davo, Fritz, the giant squid, and Mojo, this has been Poor Mojo's News Show. I'm Alan Bernard.